Welcome to Generations. My name is Dave Buhner. I'm normally the co-host of this program, but right now the host is away, and so the co-host will play. Hey, I'm in studio here with Steve Vaughn, a father, a community leader, a business owner, a man involved with his church, and next to me, looking quite handsome. Steve, welcome to Generations.
Well, thank you. You speak too highly of me.
Today, we're going to talk about our society and the loss of civility. Now, civility is an old-fashioned word. It means to actually behave well. And pretty much, you know, having manners and knowing how to behave in society. Occasionally, you'll hear about somebody in New York who steps out of character, because New York is, especially the city, is notorious for people with bad manners. But occasionally, you'll hear of some New Yorker who will help a stranger. Stepping out of character, you know, instead of giving them the Bronx cheer, will actually help them. And that's unusual. That's unusual. We hear them from time to time, but I'm seeing that the entire culture is becoming less civil, less polite, less kind. The whole culture, it seems to be very abrasive at every turn. Now, we're recording this the week after Black and Blue Friday. And you've heard all the ads for Black Friday, when all the stores try and get you to come in and buy all their stuff before you have a chance to think about whether you should buy it or not. But Black and Blue Friday is what it should be called, because the day was marked all across the country by various events in which people were physically harmed. In one case, I believe it was in Ohio, a man had died. He had actually had a heart attack and right there in the store, and his body was laying on the ground. And instead of people doing what civil people would do, like calling 911 or calling the store or doing CPR or something, they walked around him, most of them, to continue shopping because, you know, there was a bargain just 40 feet past him. Yeah. And he was blocking them. Some people walked over him. Now, in the defense of civility, nobody that we know of stepped on him. That's one incident. We have the woman with mace. We have a good fist to cuff fight. We saw a video from Victoria's Secret over a pair of some kind of baggy parachute pants or some whatnot. We have police acting uncivil. We have uncivil behavior in the stores on the day after a day of gratitude towards God for his providence. Well, Black and Blue Friday, I think, is just a reflection of our culture. It was an opportunity for some of our loss of civility to surface. People had license on that day. It wasn't different markedly than any other day. It should have been, because the day before was a day that was supposed to be a day of festive worship, remembering the providences of the goodness and the grace of God to us sinful people who deserved far worse than we received this last year. Well, that's not the only kind of evidence of a loss of civility. I think we see it all over the media. In this political season, we are seeing very uncivil campaigns, even in the Republican primary. And I say even because the Republicans are supposed to be the civil ones. You know, the Republican Senate is supposed to be a bunch of white collar country club golf clapping polite gentlemen. And it turns out that the Republican Party really is not that at all. We are seeing, though, the media engaged in a flavor of the day campaign, rising or helping elevate one candidate to a certain popular status, only to enjoy the theater of tearing them down one by one. It seems that the mainstream media delights in exercising and flexing their muscles, their ability to slander and get away with it.
Yes, beware when the world speaks well of you, because that means there might be something wrong with you as well. But the media does seem to take delight in building somebody up, you know, Herman Cain, and then tearing him down through, you know, all of these accusations of sexual impropriety and anything else.
Well, what we're seeing is a behavior from the mainstream media. And we can talk about their motivations. I think their motivations are quite apparent. Here we have a black man who has left the plantation, an uppity black man. And if he gets away, other black people might get off the plantation as well. The black population is a voting bloc that votes 90% Democrat up and down the board. It doesn't matter who's running. It doesn't matter who's not running. You can run Alvin Green. Remember Alvin Green? sort of, yeah, Alvin Green won a primary. He was illiterate, but he was black, and so he won a primary. They can run anybody, and the black population will always pull for the Democrat. It's a voting bloc with great solidarity. Now along comes a man like Herman Cain, who says, no, there's a better way than depending on the government food stamps, Planned Parenthood to kill your children. You can actually have children and prosper. You can work hard in America and prosper. It may not be easy. There may be people gunning against you, other blacks, but you can succeed. Now, if his message gets through, this threatens the solidarity of that voting bloc and the power of those who run the plantation, quite frankly. And so we're seeing a very uncivil campaign against Herman Cain, based on innuendo and rumor by some of the worst characters that society could produce.
Amen. And so the question then comes, why would anybody even worthy of fulfilling that office even run for office these days? They know what they're up against. You might be as fine as rubies, but the media and the incivility of the United States and, you know, the people in general are want to tear you down.
Well, we've seen this with the black man candidate. We've also seen it with the woman's candidates. We've seen Sarah Palin, of course, when she was asked to be John McCain's vice presidential candidate. The press engaged in all kinds of fictitious rumor mongering in order to try and destroy Sarah Palin. And they have one reporter moved right next door that he could tell salacious rumors about her, hiding under First Amendment protection because she is a public person. This is something that's really a huge contributor to our loss of civility, that is hiding behind the First Amendment to engage in character assassination, slander and libel. Well, it's not legally slander and libel because we're talking about public persons. And if they weren't public before, they will be public by the time we're done slandering them. Like, you know, Joe the plumber comes to mind, somebody like that, that this being safe, shielded from laws of civility, especially the media being shielded from laws of civility, I think has done a great deal of damage to the politeness and the manners of this society. We have been on this path for some time. We may have been more civil in the 40s and the 50s, but the basis of civility is, of course, godliness. And we have becoming a more and more godless society all the time. The Christian has a reason to be civil, and that's to honor their God. The non-Christian has no real reason to be civil, unless perhaps they're an Ayn Randian type of, I will be civil because it will further my self-enlightened best interest. In other words, their civility is always selfish and never meek. You look at the way in which politicians will lie, which is basically whenever they're talking, right?
Yes.
You know, people are complaining to me. They say the super committee failed. And I say, no, they did. It did exactly what they were designed to do. They were designed to create more government and make it so that Republicans could blame Democrats and Democrats could blame Republicans. It accomplished exactly what it was meant to do. It was the lie to think that they were ever serious about reducing the size of government. They were ever serious about balancing the budget. They were only serious about increasing government. And I think, you know, I'm speaking to motivations here, and I don't know the heart of all men, but it's quite obvious from their behavior that if that was their motivation, they would not have behaved any differently than they have.
Right. A tree is known by its fruit, and you're not going to get good fruit from a bad tree or bad fruit from a good tree. And so I think we're seeing the fruit of what's been going on over the last decades in the United States, where we see a difference in our dress. We see feminism. We see all kinds of cursing, that there's blasphemy in the movies constantly. And again, Black and Blue Friday is what we saw just last week.
Well, part of it has to be blamed on education. And we always go there because this program is all about discipleship, and especially discipling our young children. When you send your children to a public school, what tends to happen in the government-run schools is the child with the worst manners becomes the standard. He tends to pull everybody's manners down to his level. A child with very polite manners does not correct the group. Meekness is not contagious, in other words. So we have children who watch HBO and Cinemax, who are very, very adept at insults. Mm-hmm. I'm just amazed when I look at the political blogs in the comment section. The comment section is really a encyclopedia of how to insult. Not just the mindless flaming. Some of it is really good intellectual insults. Those who can change names to make them sound like something else, and on and on. It is amazing the bumper sticker insults that people they apparently spend a lot of time thinking about this, or it's just a knee jerk reaction. They learned it. Where did they learn it? They learned it in public schools. That's where they learned it.
Yeah, and I like what Doug Phillips has said. I think it was him that said that if you hug a pig, the pig doesn't get any cleaner. You end up getting more dirty. And by going into these public school, government school systems, you're essentially hugging a pig, and you will come out much more dirty than what you did going in.
In the public schools, you are most likely not to be taught manners. I mean, simple, polite manners, not eating with your elbows on the table, saying please and thank you. You're welcome. Opening a door for a lady. Don't ever do that in a public school. You'll be in the principal's office talking about how insensitive you are. The public schools, rather, teach you to raise your hand and stand in line. They teach you a socialist behavior, a group mentality, but not a meekness, the foundation of civility. I see dress as a great indicator of our loss of civility. It's interesting to go back and look at movies that were produced in the 60s. The men wore jackets and ties, hats. They all looked like they were professionals. Mm-hmm. Even the blue-collar workers in the movies of the 60s dressed appropriately, but dressed well. You didn't see T-shirts hanging out until maybe James Dean and some of the Rebel movies that were coming up. What we saw was a dress that was respectful and appropriate for position. Today, we see T-shirts with sometimes obscenities on them. Insults are very common. You know, we all get a laugh of the I'm with stupid T-shirt the first time. Mm-hmm. But really, that is an indication of a complete loss of respect, honor, and civility. It not only offends the person on your right or your left, depending on the arrow, it really offends the person wearing the T-shirt. That they would be such a person. I have seen this propagated or adopted by the churches just as well. The church wants to be just as worldly. If you go to CBD, look T-shirts up, or any Bible bookstore, a family bookstore, you will find the worldly T-shirts with just a little bit of Jesus worked in. They'll just twist a little word and make it about Jesus. But we're basically down to colorful undershirts.
Absolutely. And, you know, I see that all the time, and they think by wearing such a T-shirt, then that's a witness of the Word of God, but it's really a witness to something else. And you also see this in tattoos. You see this, you know, Christian, so quote unquote Christian tattoos. And we were even talking about these 70 Harley drivers going to the Wailing Wall, and how uncivil that was.
That's right. I have a story here. It's in some ways it's very funny, but because you couldn't make this stuff up. But it's a real story. 71 tattooed Texas Pentecostal preachers were up to Israel's Wailing Wall on Harleys. Now, picture this, okay? You have a place in which I understand it's a false religion because they don't accept Christ, but you have Orthodox Jews. You got the yarmulke on the head. They've got the long beard. They're at the wall. They're putting their prayers in it. They're crying out for relief of the people. And here come 71 tattooed Hell's Angels roaring in their Harleys because, you know, loud pipes are safe pipes.
That's right.
That's inconsiderate. Now, again, I'm not saying that the Orthodox Jews are on the right path, the path of salvation. But there is a fear of God that they're trying to exercise, and that's not the way to witness to them, you know, just roaring into their prayers. That's not how Christians are to behave. But you're right. We see Christians becoming as worldly as the world. Christian tattoos all over the place. You know, we don't really care what Leviticus says. We just want to be like the world. After all, how else can you express your uniqueness unless you get a tattoo like everyone else?
Yeah, my wife was telling me this has been several months ago that she was out in Kansas, and you know, the Bible Belt, and she was there through a Sunday. I think they were getting ready for a family reunion at that time that I was getting ready to head out to. But she went to the conservative Christian church that was there with her mother, and the senior pastor was talking about how he had lost quite a bit of weight, and then started talking about how he had pole danced from the pulpit, was talking about pole dancing after he'd lost all this
weight. Polish folk dancing.
Yeah, no, P-O-L-E dancing. And was, you know, trying to get all these laughs and things about how he had lost weight and how good his body looked now. That is just, you know, she wanted to get up and leave and probably should have. But that's just nuts. I mean, that is totally uncivil. It's coming from the pulpit now, just as these 71 pastors, tattooed pastors, going to the Wailing Wall. It's the church has changed. And, you know, we don't get much civility even from the pulpit. And it's not even being taught there either.
No, it's not. In fact, if you want to see some bad internet, you know, I've talked about the comment section in the news blogs, go to the pastor's blogs, go to the theological blogs, and you will see tremendously uncivil behavior. In the tradition that I'm from, there's a war that's being fought across the internet. Now, I'm Presbyterian, which means that we have this wonderful court system. We have ways to address problems. We have systems where a man, let's say he's a pastor and he's teaching something aberrant, heretical, he can be tried at his presbytery level, which is a group of other pastors. The regional church comes together, examines what he says, examines it according to scripture and to the vows that he took as a pastor. And if he feels he's, and if they feel he's incorrect, they can convict him. And yet his conviction doesn't stand because he has an appeal to a national court, an even larger church. And so an even larger jury, as it were, can examine for the same sort of things. But that's not what's happening. See, we're not even, here we are, Presbyterians. We got this wonderful ecclesial court system. We have all kinds of safeguards to make sure people don't get railroaded. But then we use the internet and choo, choo, choo. Here we are railroading people left and right. There is one pastor I know who's had his fourth trial, and he's been exonerated all four times. But, you know, by golly, the last court didn't do it right. We're going to try him again and again. You don't even get that in the civil courts. In the civil courts, you can't try a guy for the same crime over and over. And so we're seeing a loss of civility in the church, in my tradition, and the Presbyterian tradition. We're seeing a loss of civility all over the internet. I mean, I see pastors breaking the ninth commandment often, which is, of course, bearing a true witness. They will set up straw men. Straw men is the favorite method right now of pastors to take somebody's comments, to take them either out of context or put a false context on them, to fail to go to a brother, to, as Jesus says, go to your brother, mm-hmm. and say, you know, brother, what did you mean by that? You know, because if it was unclear, it would be a brotherly thing to do to publish in your blog a clarification. Say, you know, when he wrote that, what he really meant was this, and it would be wrong to write this. But we're not seeing that. And this is from the pastors. And I think, Steve, I think that this is a consequence of seminaries, which are basically institutions or universities in which debate is welcome. I look at the scriptures, and I don't find debate as the holy sacrament of the mind. I do find that attitude in the universities, though.
Yeah, as Augustine said, in the essentials, we must have unity. But the essentials are what are up for debate anymore, especially in seminaries and quote-unquote Christian colleges. I mean, there's debate on six-day creation. And if we're going to debate the very beginnings, then everything else is up for debate as well.
Well, and you're speaking perhaps of Peter Enns at Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia, thought to be one of the most conservative seminaries in the country, with the tradition that comes all the way from Gretchen Machen. And, you know, what happened with Peter Enns is he was rightly removed by the board for teaching aberrant theology. He was teaching that that Adam was not a man, and Paul didn't know what he was talking about. But here's the shocking thing. The faculty voted to support him. The board rightly removed him, but the faculty voted to support him. Because the faculty thought, you know, these points are interesting. They need to be debated. They need to be debated openly. I think when you have that attitude of contention, of advocacy, and every point is worth having an advocate, and that's what we're by and large getting from many of the seminaries, is that we're going to see this roll down into the people coming out of the seminaries, the pastors. They're going to teach it to their congregants. And I dare say that the church has helped lead the way in the loss of civility.
Yeah, I believe so. You just need to go or listen. Listen online, listen on the radio, go to many of the churches, and you're going to see all the seeker-sensitive. They're trying to be worldly in order to draw the world in. That's all coming from seminaries as well. It's all coming from, you know, how to grow your church. And you may end up with a lot more numbers, but you're going to end up being a mile wide and an inch thick.
You may. So we've talked about dress, how dress is becoming less civil. We see men walking around with pants down at their knees, displaying the fact that they actually do have two orbs that make up their rear end, in case you were confused about that.
Yes.
A little cleavage back there. That used to be considered rude, not hip.
Yeah. And I know where that came from, and we don't even need to go there. We see it in feminism as well, that feminism in general ends up being uncivil. It's trading roles. It's feminizing men and masculinizing women.
To the point where if you're a man and you open a car door for a woman, you may be insulted. A very civilized behavior. See, a civilized society, men take care of their women. Men fight the wars for the women. They don't draft women. They don't put women in the army if there's protection to be done. Men do that. Men care for their women. They'll lay down their jacket, perhaps, to cover a muddy area. Not that the woman is incompetent to walk through the mud, but it's a civil thing to do. Not that a woman is incompetent to open the door, but by opening the door for your mother, say, or your wife, or even your daughter, you give them honor as the weaker vessel and joint heirs of the kingdom.
Yeah, but feminism teaches that this is treating them as weaker, as weakness, not as honorable. And so they have railed against all of these things. They've railed against civility. And, it really hasn't gotten them very far, has it?
No, it hasn't. And what it's taught women is that power is what counts. And we see feminism taking a forked path. One path, I'm going to call it the ugly woman path, is the one where you go to women's studies and you scream and loud, "I am woman, hear me roar." The other path is the beautiful woman path, in which she uses her beauty and sexuality in order to manipulate men. And we see the results of this all over an over-sexualized, under-sexed culture, where young girls wear the tightest clothes they can find. I mean, you couldn't hardly distinguish it from being painted on. And I understand there's people who walk around in paint instead of clothes because they can get away with it, featuring their assets, their sexual assets, for all to see in order to call attraction to themselves. Now, in a civilized society, women were beautiful, but they weren't featuring their sexuality because it was uncivil to tempt men who weren't their husbands to sexual thoughts. But that's not what we're seeing now. We're seeing every woman trying to become as manipulative as they can. And those who don't have the assets to be manipulative, we see them just becoming loud and obnoxious.
Yeah, that goes, I mean, if we're going to bring the Bible into this, that goes all the way back to Genesis, in which the desire of the woman would be for her husband. It would be for the husband's role. And if they can use their sexuality for power, and to take over that role, to manipulate, then that's exactly what's going on.
Yep. And Hollywood, let's talk about Hollywood. Hollywood loves to take a beautiful woman who is sexually provocative and then make her physically powerful, too. We have the whole genre of beautiful women. We got boxers. We've got spies. We've got Angelina Jolie as a CIA operative. And it's very believable. Okay. That was sarcasm.
Yes.
we're we're seeing the sexualization of women all over the place. And the movies are no help at all in civility. In fact, cursing, blasphemy, they make common. They make the holy name of God not only just common, they make it a curse.
Yeah, and I would implore any of you out there to check that, because you know the church becomes even desensitized to all of this, to where we hear it and we're not offended anymore, and that then the desensitizing then causes us to be even more uncivil, and you know it's just an everyday thing now to hear the Lord's name taken in vain. When back in the day, back when I was a kid, that you could get slapped for that.
Yeah. And that was a spanking, much like it would be not to run out in the road, because more danger could come to you. Because we believed back then that the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. So just because the Lord is patient in his judgment doesn't mean he's apathetic.
Yeah, he is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. He does not deal with us according to our sins or repay us for our iniquities. But that doesn't mean he waits forever and ever. Judgment day does come, and people are judged based upon what they do, and they're judged according to God's standards, not man's.
So there you have it. Up and down society. We started with the civil magistrate and the political process. It is very uncivil. We looked at people and their lives shopping. Extraordinarily uncivil. I do appreciate that Walmart at least has somebody greets you, make sure you're not stealing, but they greet you. We've seen it in dress. Dress has become far more uncivil. It really is about my comfort and not about your comfort and how a person dresses. We see it in the church, too. People do not come to worship dressed to honor their king. They complain that the chairs are hard instead of having their lazy boys. Now, I understand not everybody feels comfortable or at home in a jacket and a tie. But it should be you bringing your best if you're coming to worship the King of Kings, I would think. I mean, if I were even this president, who I have not the highest regard for, but if he were to invite me to dinner because of the office, I would want to dress appropriately, which would mean to give honor to the office. I would show up in the White House with a jacket and a tie. But we don't see that in worship either. That's from the pastors.
Yes.
The pastors are in the trendy t-shirts.
Blue jeans and t-shirts.
We see tattoos. We see sexually provocative dress. We see dress that says, I really don't give a rip how I look. We see men with long hair. The Bible says nature even teaches us it's a shame for men to have long hair. We see cursing and blasphemy in the movies. We see feminists objecting to polite behavior. We see insults. The internet is filled with insults. And we're sitting here, what happened to civility? Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break right now. And when we get back, Steve Vaughn and Dave Buhner are going to talk about how to restore civility.
Are you tired of running the corporate rat race? Are you struggling to make healthcare choices? Are you looking for a better job? Maybe even a job that your entire family can be involved in. Do you want to take your family to the next level? The 2012 Family Economics Conference is designed to help family with the vision and resources to make practical steps to build their family's economy. From practical household budgeting and finance, to starting your own business, to making wise decisions about college and career preparation, the Family Economics Conference has something for everyone. There will even be a special Proverbs 31 track for the ladies' role in the family economy. For more information, or to sign up online, go to www.familyeconomics2012.com. That's familyeconomics2012.com.
And we're back on Generation. Steve Vaughn and Dave Buhner here discussing the lack of civility Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we've complained a lot, Steve, but we want to talk about how to restore civility and why restore civility. One of the things that's incredibly important to know is that when missionaries come into a land which we'd say uncivilized, we say they're an uncivilized people. One of the things you observe right away is uncivilized people are undressed. When the gospel comes, or civilization, which I think are hand in hand, by the way, when the gospel comes, when the law of God comes to a land, one of the first things that transforms a culture and moves it towards civilized is they start putting on clothes.
Wow. Yeah, and that is reflected in America right now. The problem with incivility and the fact that they are gratifying the desires of the flesh is that the clothes have started to come off, and the clothes have changed, and there's immodesty not only on the outward but also on the inward. But you know, the answer to this, I think, is biblical, like every other answer is. It's the walk by the Spirit and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. And the desires of the flesh are evident, that they are sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. That is
our Congress.
That, yeah, and much of society today. That is where we are. But what is the answer there, Dave?
Well, the answer is to, and you're in Galatians 5, is earlier, walk in the Spirit and not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. Now, we can, and we'll get to what the Spirit is here. We have the ability to do this in the power of the Spirit. Nothing is preventing us. I'm reminded of a story of a young man who goes to college, and in his first day at college, he opens the door for an older woman and holds it open that she might walk through. And she gives him a big frown and says, "What do you think you're doing, young man?" And he says, "I'm holding the door open for you. My mother told me to be a gentleman and open the door for ladies." And she says, "I'm no lady." And he said, "Be that as it may, I'm a gentleman." And he continued to hold the door. See, we still have a choice. We may have to take some slings and arrows. We have a choice. If we walk in the Spirit, then the Spirit bears fruit in our lives. That is, our actions is what we do. And those are things like love and joy and peace and patience. But let's go to the next part of the list. It's things like kindness. What is being kind? Is it kind to speak well of another person?
Absolutely.
Is it kind to dress well in their presence? You know, you wouldn't want to go shopping in your boxer shorts and a t-shirt.
Although I have seen pajamas in Walmart.
Yes, I have too. See, it's not kind. It's goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Now, what we're talking about here is a word the King James uses, meekness. And meekness means thinking about others before you think about yourself, preferring others. I want to dress for the benefit of others, not to make myself look good, but in order to give honor. I want to speak, not so everyone knows how smart I am. Of course, that always backfires anyway. I think it was Winston Churchill who once said, "You can let the world think you're an idiot, or you can start talking and remove all doubt." But the point is that we're to use our mouth to edify, to build up. And who can tame the tongue? Well, the Spirit can. That's the answer to James. The Spirit can. We want to use our actions in order to benefit others, to edify, a good biblical word, to build up others that they might build the kingdom. But we're going to build them up in holiness. There's a big difference between saying to a young lady, "Wow, you look smoking hot, girl." That just could build her up. It could build up her ego, and she could feel pretty good about herself, especially if somebody other than me was saying it. If I was saying it, she would say, "What a dirty old man." But rather say, "God has blessed you," and to exhort her to walk in humility, meekness, and joy. See, there's a big difference of building her up in Christ and just building her flesh.
Right. And I think a lot of it also is found in the one another skills. I believe it's there's about 51 times that it talks about building each other up, loving one another, and to love, to agape someone else is to want what's best for them. And that's in how you treat them and how you present yourself to them in building each other up.
So, folks, the answer to the loss of civility is the Spirit of God, but the Spirit of God works through the law of God. The law of God teaches us how to behave in society. It teaches us how to love God and how to love my neighbor. The first tablet or table of the Ten Commandments, as we call it, deal with my relationship to God. I'm not to take his name in vain. I'm not to have other gods. I'm not to have idols. I'm to remember one day in seven and keep it holy for his sake. The rest of the law deals with how I treat my neighbor with civility. It's a summary of the law. I don't steal from him. I don't destroy his name. I don't lie about him. I don't take his goods. I don't even covet his goods. I instead want what's best for him.
And so when Jesus was asked to sum up the law, he said to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, which encompasses the first part of the Ten Commandments, then love your neighbor as yourself, which is the rest of them. So he said, essentially, all ten are still to be followed today.
Well, there you have it, folks. The answer to an impolite society is a people who are polite because they walk in the Spirit of God according to the law of God, for the glory of God. Hey, my name is Dave Buhner. I'm with Steve Vaughn, the program's Generations. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to write us at kevin@generationswithvision.com. And we'll see you again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.